thanks for joining us for this new episode of the Mostly AI Smart Pod from the editors of AI Impact Smart Brief. I'm Susan Rush, and today, along with my co-hosts, Michael Domingo and Victoria Martinez, we're going to be talking about the future of AI in digital marketing. And we've got a great interview from the perspective of a marketing CEO who's in the trenches with it right now. But along with the interview, we will have our usual segments. Last Week in AI, I'll talk with the NotBots, and Vicky's 2-Minute Tech Pulse. Over to you, Domingo.
I have a few honorable mentions. First is Elon Musk. He became a trillionaire, I guess, last week, right? Is that like an AI story? Probably not, but maybe a little bit. I thought maybe AI actually helped him get there. It's probably the biggest news for an honorable mention, right? And so is also the SpaceX IPO. I might add that some of that, you know what, my friends, I have a couple friends who actually work there, so their stock options made them newly minted millionaires, which kind of makes me jealous. But we'll ignore that for now. Last week's saga was the U.S. government closing off Fable and the Mythos Access. That might be another gigantic story in AI to ignore, but I'm going to do that. Okay. Instead, my piece for Last Week in AI, and don't laugh, all right? It's this story on the Alabama.com news site on McDonald's using AI to shorten the idle time in the drive-thru. You might say, so what? The what is this? What I want is my fries to be hot and my wait to be short. If AI gets me my fries that much quicker, I wouldn't have to keep sending them back cold fries for a redo. In any event, they created an AI assistant called Archie, or actually it's called Arch IQ, and they call it Archie. They're testing it to streamline kitchen operations, and get this, the app is supposed to free up employees from having to work in the cooking side and engage more with customers. Imagine that. Before I go on, and actually before I end my segment, I wanted to offer a couple side notes. While I was going through the background on Archie, I Googled and fell into the rabbit hole. Let me tell you about this story about this Wyoming farmer who got banned from the drive-thru. He tried to steer a horse-drawn cart through one earlier this year. And another story from 2020 of a drive-through over at in Germany. This is a drive-through for McDonald's for boats. It's not quite what it sounds like. Basically, they drive up in a dock. McDonald's has a kiosk on the dock, and you just shimmy yourself up there, order, and they bring the food dockside. And I thought those were kind of cool stories. You can find the links for those and the rest of the stories in the guide for this episode. So, Susan, you had some stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Domingo. I love that McDonald's story. You know, it sounds funny and it sounds like quirky that AI is in the food industry, but it's actually one of the industries leading the charge. You know, voice AI is gaining traction in the industry for many different things. But just like McDonald's, Burger King introduced Patty. She's an AI chatbot. And she also she's also helping the quick service chain improve their customer interactions. So she's tracking how often they say please and thank you. So they're really trying to upgrade that customer experience. So you know, it sounds funny, but I think it's actually really, really important and a really great use of AI. So we'll see how that shakes out. But as per usual, the food industry is, you know, and retail, you know, they're always at the forefront of trying new things and making sure that their customer is put first. So, so my honorable mention this week is the idea of a US-backed AI sovereign wealth fund. That has been kicking around. Bernie Sanders has his idea for it. The White House came out with their own idea. We've heard from some analysts. So we asked our AI Impact Smart Brief readers, and 42% of them said, this is a really bad idea. And then 45% collectively backed the idea, but no one could agree on which plan was best. So I guess at this point, we're just going to have to keep watch and see if a plan bubbles to the top or if it even happens at all. Vicky?
It sounds like politics, right? 45% and 42%.
Well, actually, before I do my honorable mention, you know, if Burger King and McDonald's want to speed up their customer service, all they have to do is talk to somebody at Chick-fil-A, because I don't know if you guys have seen, those people are like amazing. They are just so packed, and I have no idea how they get your food like super fast. Customer service is on point. I don't know. And I don't think they're using AI. I think they're just like, I don't know, they're robots. But maybe, you know, McDonald's and Burger King should talk to them if they really want to deal with customer service, because Chick-fil-A doing it right.
Please open on Sundays, right?
No, it's closed on Sundays.
I know, but open on Sundays. That's what I want. Chick-fil-A is Sunday.
I'm gonna put the AI
version of Chick-fil-A.
AI version on Sundays. Chick-fil-A on Sundays.
There you go.
AI version.
So they can work.
For my actual honorable mention, not in the food industry whatsoever, is actually, I wrote about it this week on our AI impact wave. It is AI fatigue. It has been a trending topic at an HR conference this past week. There's two different sides to it. From the employee side, they have the stress and anxiety of trying to upskill and learn how to use AI. And there's this whole thought of AI displace, of workforce displacement because of AI. And then from the tech side on the engineers, it's like they feel like they're glorified babysitters when their work is supposed to be simplified. It's actually doubled because they're now overseeing a ton of AI agents. So it's interesting to think about, and something that I've never even, you know, I would have considered, but, you know, reading into it, it's like, well, you know what? You're right. Like, yes, you're simplifying my life, but at the same time, I'm also having to make sure you're doing it right. So instead of me just doing it myself, why have you do it, an AI agent? So it's interesting to see, is it really helping us out or not?
I had some thoughts on that. I really like that piece, actually. It was the whole idea of like AI fatigue, right? You know, everyone's brains are like, you know, trying to like go to the next thing and not worry about all these menial tasks, right? So I wonder how much of that information is going into my, you know, like how much information can I cram into my tiny little brain and how much can I like remove to make it easier, right? Sometimes I'll look at menial tasks and I'll think, cool, AI can do that for me. The problem is, I have this odd thing where I have to do the menial task to move on. And it's weird because sometimes I get motivated to do something like change the oil or do my quarterly taxes. And I have to make sure the dishes are cleared away before I can even do anything. Or my bathroom has to be spick and span. And so I got to do those things before I can actually move on to like the more complicated stuff. It's just kind of how my brain works. And I think of this, look at the whole AI thing where, you know, like AI fatigue. I actually need that stuff to keep my brain working. Otherwise, if I do only the, you know, like the hard stuff and not do anything, some of the menial stuff, it almost makes my brain hurt. That's how I'm feeling these days, in fact. It's like AI fatigue is really kind of like working personally on myself, I think. So anyways, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I think it's kind of like a new, like work-life balance, right? Like everyone talks about work-life balance, but now we need a,
Work AI balance.
Yeah.
I guess I need to be coached.
It's real. It's a real thing. So, yeah.
Hey, let's talk about AI and digital marketing. A week ago, I had the chance to talk with Patrick Briggs, the CEO of Semify, who had some provocative thoughts about AI and what it's doing to shape digital marketing's future. Some of it has to do with the risk that might come with all of that, especially with model collapse. And I asked him about an article he wrote a couple of months ago for Fast Company that he talked about. Human in the loop design and how that figures into the creative process of AI digital marketing. And here's that interview. I'm here with Patrick Briggs. He's the chief executive officer at Semify, a leading white label digital marketing platform based in New York. Patrick joined the company as CEO in January 2022 after Semify was acquired by the private equity firm Broadtree Partners. And Patrick specializes in helping marketing agencies and reselling partners scale through software and fulfillment services. I know that's kind of like a broad stroke version of your bio. So talk to me about what Semify is, how, you know, what you've been doing in the business.
Yes, and thank you for having me on, Michael. So, kind of like zoomed in a little bit more. Semify offers the kind of the team and the software and the infrastructure for lots and lots of marketing agencies here in the U.S. And we also have some business in Australia and Canada. And what we are doing for our clients is we're providing the team and the infrastructure to do their performance marketing, right? So that includes paid social advertising, paid search advertising. It includes SEO, traditional SEO. Now we have this new service that we offer, we call AI optimization or AIO. Some people call it AEO, some people call it GEO, but the concept is the same, which is like, how do you promote a client's visibility within LLMs? We're a white label provider, meaning we're kind of the back office of a lot of marketing agencies. And so we are totally behind the scenes. We let the marketing agency kind of run and think about how they want to strategize with their clients. And then we're there to execute on their behalf. And we're doing that, across agencies here in the US, Canada, and Australia.
What does the competitive market look like for your business as far as like how do you sit in it, what's your situation within other businesses?
Yeah,
I guess competitors.
Yeah, there's some big players in the space that have been doing this for a long time. Both domestic players like us, so companies that have most of their employee base in the United States. Which is what we have. There's also international competitors. And I think that's been the traditional kind of structure of the market. If you think about it, I think about the world kind of in a fixed versus variable cost leverage concept. And like for us, like the value of aggregating services across many marketing agencies with us is that we can, apply best practices quicker. We have more infrastructure to support them, and we can help them kind of manage the ups and downs of their own client cycles, right? If you think about it, like, hey, if I am an marketing agency and I lose a client, well, I have to make a decision about am I hiring or firing, as opposed to if they're working with us, they can just turn off that campaign, right? And so instead of having to worry about am I staffing this appropriately for our growth, but also staffing it appropriately for a stagnation period, we can mitigate that across a larger client base and help protect that for them on their P&L, right? So that's the concept of fixed cost leverage, right? We turn their what can be really powerful for them on the upside, but can also be very dangerous on the downside, this concept of fixed cost, right? And we make it a variable cost for them so that it's much more protecting of their P&L and their business as they continue to kind of find their growth as a business. There's lots of players that do that. I think one thing that's changed in the market is there's a lot of new entrants around, hey, let's just automate everything. And, like from the single small guys that are just saying, hey, I'm just going to use a Claude Cowork session and try to automate my entire marketing flow, to the guys to big venture-backed software players that are trying to enter this space and automating everything through proprietary systems that sit on top of the LLM models. We happy to have a conversation about why that is dangerous. But generally speaking, the bigger players in the space have a pretty big service team like we do.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about why it's dangerous. Give me an idea of what you mean by dangerous.
Yeah. So everybody is leveraging AI to very various degrees right now, and we are certainly no different. We've added a lot of services and value for our client and our clients rather by adding AI into our workflows and improving. We've been able to grow our business and add new services. And that's kind of how we approach AI, is a sense of like, hey, how do we add new services? How do we add new value to clients with the advent of AI, as opposed to like, oh, we're just going to, remove humans from our cycle or from our processes. And the reason for that is really what's, you're starting to see Google, which is the provider of one of the frontier models in Gemini, but also arguably the kind of the 10,000 pound gorilla when it comes to how should we be acting within search, or how should we be acting within LLMs, right? There's a lot of data out there that OpenAI is scraping Google results to augment their own models. Whether or not that results in court cases is, that's not, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so that's not my place to comment on.
For sure.
But the short answer is, you know, what the way Google goes is the way OpenAI and Claude and all those other guys are going to go too. Google has already signaled very aggressively that they're not interested in people that are kind of putting out just AI recycled slop or AI recycled content or whatever, that kind of stuff. And so as Google starts to get more aggressive in their strategies and communication around that, these guys that are just doing these fully automated loops of just generating AI content and putting it on websites and doing AI based best practices are going to get hammered. And so I view it as, you already started to see it, there's countless examples in the SEO community around, hey, these websites built a bunch of AI stuff, Google looked at it, you know, let it sit for 6, 7, 5 weeks, I don't know what the right exact time period is, and then they just de-indexed all of it. That's what's going to happen to all these guys that are just, oh, we can automate everything with AI, right? If you can automate everything with AI, so can everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, there's no differentiation. And in the way Google would put that in their parlance is there's no EEAT value or expertise or experience value. And so then they're just going to take that out of their index, right? One of the things people forget is like, I don't remember the exact stat, but I believe it was about 3% of the internet pre-AI Google indexed, right? So 97% of the internet was ignored by Google and only 3% was. That was really hard for SEOs to get into that index at the time. And the internet is only growing at an exponential rate thanks to all the stuff that's going on with AI. And so now the question is Google going to increase that index? Probably not. What they're going to do is make the N is probably, or the size of the index is going to stay the same, but the amount of content is going to grow, which means on a percent basis, the index is going to shrink. Right. So maybe now, mm-hmm. I don't know the exact number, only people in Google know that. But now the index is going to be, let's say, 1% of the total internet. And that just means the bar to get into that 1% is going to be that much higher than it ever has been in the past. And so what does that mean? Can you do the same thing as everyone else? No, you have to be different. If you want to be in that 1%, if you want to be in the index, you've got to be different, right? If someone comes along and says, we've got a button, you push this button and do everything in AI, well, your chances of getting the index are diminishing every single day on that push easy button, let's call it.
Yeah. The push easy button, though, too, can probably come up with some pretty creative ways of getting into the index, though, wouldn't you say? I mean, they're starting to use, there's some, you know, like the AI engines are getting smarter and smarter in being able to, like.
No question. I think the way I think about it is like, hey, absolutely. Like, I would expect, you know, if you think about it from a competitive dynamic standpoint, if I've built my entire business, you know, if I'm one of the competitors of Semify and I built my entire business on AI automation, everything, I'm going to have to get really smart on AI automation, everything. And I think then it becomes a bet of who's smarter on AI automation, the people that are sitting on top of the models or the people creating the frontier models, right? In my mind is, if I'm in Google and I'm saying, hey, how do I make a frontier model that is, and use my frontier model to filter out all of this stuff versus the people that are using my model to make all this stuff, I suspect in the long run, Google's gonna win on that. And so that's where I'm saying, hey, it doesn't make sense to be misaligned with what Google's telling you or what these other frontier models are telling you. It makes sense to be aligned with them and work within their, which is harder to work within their ecosystem and do the practices that they're suggesting, because otherwise eventually they're going to catch up, right? It's going to work for a little bit. There's no question, mm-hmm. but eventually they're going to catch up. And does Google have the capitalization and the engineering team to catch up? I'd argue yes. Like any of these businesses that are sitting on top of a model, maybe they've got 20 engineers. I don't know. That's probably 100 times smaller than the number of engineers at Google. I actually don't know the number of engineers at Google, but I'm guessing they have more than 20.
Well, they might be less, actually. They might be automating now. Who knows?
I mean, Sundar did say 75% of Google's code is being written by Gemini. So maybe, but I still think it's more than 20. I can safely say that Google probably has more than 20 engineers on staff.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, so I one of the reasons why I brought you out, on is I did read this article in Fast Company that you wrote about AI native and humans in the loop. You give me a little, I guess, a synopsis of what that article is about and why you covered it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about is like, why is human in the loop design? Sometimes we internally are kind of debating whether we call it human governance or human in the loop. But right now, human in the loop seems to be the term that's sticking internally. And the reason human in the loop design is so important is exactly what we just talked about, which is like you're already seeing Google as one of three providers of frontier models saying, hey, guys, you guys need to provide content that has value. And if you're just regurgitating what the LLMs are spitting out, we do not consider that valuable. And so our design is like, hey, we're still using AI to orchestrate and automate a lot of our processes, but we need humans in there to inject the value. Otherwise, you're going to be by the wayside in this growing AI ecosystem, right? And like, remember, the index isn't growing. And so getting into that index is going to be harder and harder and harder. And so there needs to be more differentiation. That's the way we think about it is like, hey, we've got a team to provide that differentiation. Let's do that as part of our design. And so all of our processes are designed around how do we inject that differentiation within that process so that we can make sure that we're staying a part of the index for our clients, a part of the ecosystem for our clients. And that's the real thesis there, right? Like if everyone can, you know, if you think about it, if everyone can be, use the frontier models for relatively low cost, sometimes no cost, then there's no differentiation, right? And so how do we differentiate? How do we provide value? And we're doing it in the guise of where the frontier models are signaling we should be doing it. So it's not that controversial in my mind, because like, you know, everybody, you know, everyone at Google, and Google's the only one really giving guidance on this, is saying, do this. And so we're saying, oh, we will do that. And I think if I kind of zoom out a bit, I have this kind of theory around the concept of model collapse. And there's a lot of research, you know, there was a paper published in Nature, which is a very preeminent, like, scientific journal. Talking about the concept of like, hey, this recursive, if the models are feeding on their own content and it becomes this recursive loop, that it really destroys the value of LLMs. And part of what I think is going on in this ecosystem and why Google is really saying to us and why the rest of the ecosystem needs human in the loop design is because if these models become so fed on their own content, it destroys that business, right? We're not talking about, does it destroy the AIO or SEO industry? We're talking about it, does it destroy the LLMs? And I think that the frontier models are starting to think, you know, nobody's said this publicly, but I think the frontier models have to be thinking about this, like, how do we make sure the content we're including in what we're building in our training data is human designed content? Otherwise, we're going to get into this behavior where the models become effectively, if you kind of read some of the papers, they become somewhere, the models have some kind of degree of dyslexia or dementia. Mm-hmm. And like, if that happens to these models,
Are you trying to avoid using the word hallucination?
Yeah, right. Well, no, the paper that I'm referencing talks about the model becoming dyslexic, meaning it can't put words together. Like it starts using the wrong letters and words and stuff like that. And that's hallucination, big problem, no question about that. Mm-hmm. But this is a more existential threat to the models. If the models cannot actually put a word together, whether or not the word is the right word, that's an existential threat.
Okay. I see what you mean. Yeah. Okay.
And I think that's the problem there, right? Is like, hey, is this an existential, is the concept of model collapse an existential threat to the entire LLM industry? I don't know. I'm certainly not a AI PhD, but I'm reading this and I'm wondering, hey, if I'm an LLM researcher at Google or OpenAI or Anthropic or whatever, I'm certainly reading that same research. And I'm certainly thinking about how do I cleanse my data to make sure that doesn't happen to my models, right? And so if I'm going to be cleaning my data to make sure that doesn't happen to my models, and I'm more aggressive about removing AI content than even the internet is potentially, then that means the bar is getting higher and higher and higher, right? And mm-hmm. That's what we're focused on. Say, hey, let's be at where the bar is the highest, as opposed to where it is today.
Well, I don't, I don't want to take up too much of your time, so I'd love to let you get on with it. One of the things I would like to say, Patrick, is really thanks for coming on and talking to us on the Mostly AI Smart Pod.
Yeah, happy to do so, and appreciate you giving me so much of your time.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
I hope you liked that interview. I did have a few things that I took away from it. Basically, that AI should add value through human oversight and not replace humans entirely. That differentiation, that's key to making something stand out in an already saturated AI landscape. I keep seeing the same dancing AI cats dancing. They're cooking. But I actually love that AI slop. Problem is, it starts to look the same, right? And on another point, from the article that he wrote, he mentioned something about AI being trained, and the idea that model collapse is bound to eventually be a threat down the road. He says there's he didn't say it. This is something I was thinking about. It seems like there's infinite amounts of info, and some of that info is just the same info actually in a variety of formats that it appears different. Especially to AI, it'll just redigest stuff. And that's kind of a simplification, but that info being the same for training, it's essentially AI eating the same food over and over. And then we ask it to regurgitate in a million different ways. Not to come back to the McDonald's theme, but that's anyways the way AI is bound to choke on itself. And that's basically what I'm getting at. And I thought maybe, Susan, you might have some thoughts on this, on the interview.
Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to Patrick. It's always great to listen to somebody who's working from the inside, giving us their thoughts and what they're seeing. And this idea of human in the loop, it's so important. But I also feel like the phrase it's been hit with some backlash. I think it's being overused or even misused. But I think Patrick makes a really valid point. Humans do have to inject value. Maybe the idea is more human in the center, as we stave off that much, too much automation leading to that model collapse. He also pointed out that, Google routinely de-indexes mass-produced AI content. So we can't just be throwing things out there, pushing a button to generate content, and it really will cause companies to lose their competitive advantage. Those were some of the biggest things I took away from him, from his speech.
What's interesting is you brought up the whole idea of the human in the loop being kind of overused. There's actually a portion of the interview that I cut off because I thought, it was just going on. And but he talked about how human in the loop is actually kind of overused. So he actually calls it AI native. He wants to kind of change the term himself. I don't know. He didn't say there's going to be any success or he's going to make some major effort to do that. But he tends to want to use that term instead. So that was kind of interesting.
Just chiming in right now, this is actually a huge topic of discussion for the last couple, especially now with the Keynes Festival of Creativity. Big deal with having to think of, the humans have to be part of the creative and everything. I think that is, in general, the AI was meant to not just help us, but I think that people have, like you said, Susan, have misused it. I think that it's being overused versus, again, and I say this a lot, it's using AI as a partner, not as the end game who's going to produce and create a content. I think using it as a partner to do the research, to help you with the smaller tasks that, can save you time and make you better and creatives better. I think that's where it needs to come into play. And like Susan said, I think, it's being overused, but the human definitely has to be interjected in the middle, I think.
Yeah. For sure. We got to remember as humans, it's going to be Terminator style pretty soon if we don't. The links for his his site and everything else is in the companion guide to this podcast.
All right. So kicking off your 2 minute tech pulse this week, we've have kind of a two for one, starting off with Perplexity Comet Browser. This is basically an alternative AI native browser that essentially synthesizes any live web research into a whole structured report. And instead of just traditional search results links, it'll focus on like a whole answer engine that's optimized and it'll fact check and do research. So I think that's definitely a bonus, especially for people who are researching or doing any editorial projects or just research work. That's going to be really great. This is the one that's a twofer. It's the Key Moments and Match Chat. This is something that was created by IBM for Wimbledon just in time for the tournament coming up in about this week, actually. No, June, end of this month. So IBM basically created this app that explains how the momentum influences are based on the likelihood to win. And it's available on the Wimbledon app and the web. And then Match Chat, it's basically a way for, it's a conversational platform for fans to using AI and trains on the events, and they'll basically be able to respond to including pictures and videos, anything that's going on in Wimbledon. So it's like really getting that interactive element of Wimbledon. And I think this is great because, you know, Wimbledon is tennis is being overshadowed a little bit because that's World Cup. So this is a great way to engage fans and really get that momentum going. And then last but not least, we cannot leave out, this is a new app, probably not something you've heard of. It's called Granola. It is a note-taking app. And basically what it'll do is it'll go ahead and it's a notepad for computers and phones and integrates with your calendars, and it'll generate any contextual notes, tasks, and anything researchable from your meeting notes. And it's a bot-free transcription, but it'll be able to understand like freehand, so you don't have to make sense entirely when you're writing notes, but it's a good way to keep all of your notes centralized. And it's different from Notebook or from any other big name apps, but it's a newer app to check out. So that's big takeaway from this week from the AI tools, is that they're not just standalone chat boxes, but they're basically going into your web, your notes, and your browsers. So that's your 2 minute tech pulse.
Yeah. Thanks, Vicky. You know, it's interesting. I wonder if the chat bots or that IBM Wimbledon chat is kind of blown by Serena Williams playing singles at Wimbledon this time around after she's been retired. So who knows if that'll kind of mess up the ideas of the chances of winning or not, but I guess we'll stay tuned. But anyway, well, that's our show for today. Thanks for joining us. If you like this bi-weekly podcast, please share it with your friends and your colleagues. You can follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, please subscribe to AI Impact Smart Brief. Thank you.
The Mostly AI podcast is a production of Smart Brief, a future company.